Chapter 16, Fair Questions, Possibilities. For too many years, American schools have underperformed against the rest of the industrialized nations. 25% of American high school graduates are illiterate. As a volunteer reader in a metropolitan grade school, I worked with three illiterate third graders for 1 year. The program places an adult for 1 hour a week with a child who needs help with reading. Most of the other readers were senior citizens. I think even rest home seniors would have loved the work and been good at it. It hurt me to listen to illiterate children with small vocabularies mispronouncing even small words on the printed page. At the end of the year, all three children were reading at grade level. I am convinced that the simple volunteer reading program and personal attention were all that was needed to create literate children. It may have been just as important for the child to have an hour of my personal time each week as it was to spend the time reading. Whatever the explanation, these children thrived with just a small amount of personal attention. Is there a great waiting pool of American volunteers just waiting to help children do better in school and live happier lives? Were public school teachers hired or trained to care for the multitude of disturbed children in their classrooms who are or need to be in the care of mental health professionals? Over 50% of the children in the juvenile justice system have diagnosable mental illness. Many states provide almost no mental health services for troubled youth. Do you expect that clinically untrained teachers do a good job providing psychiatric care to mentally disturbed students? Do you think that teachers are even aware of that part of their job description, or that the average teacher has a good grasp of the depth of the mental health issues these children are plagued with? Can they even begin to deal effectively with the psychosis and neurosis that affect some of their more disturbed students? Could it be seriously disrupting to the rest of their students and negatively affecting the school's overall performance to have two or three disturbed students in their classrooms? Are the majority of students underserved because teachers are required to spend the majority of their time dealing with troubled children? Is it not probable that the continued failings of our public school systems are negatively impacted by political manipulation and distorted truths? Isn't it dishonest and counterproductive to blame the teachers, blame the administrators, and blame the immigrants? For many years, American public schools reported dropout rates at or below 5%, when in fact, their dropout rates were in excess of 30%. At a time when schools are being blamed for so many problems, who do you think was responsible for this distortion and why did it occur? Is it possible that the federal No Child Left Behind law was designed to wreck public education? Is it important to take the politics out of education? Is it significant that 10 years ago, 37 out of 100 adults of color were enrolled in college and today, only 26 out of 100 are? This fact from the Star Tribune, September 15, 2004. This is a factor of greater than a 30% drop in college enrollments for people of color. This is a significant sign that the communities of color need more, not less, attention concerning access to education. New Jersey has dropped its mental health services within its school system and is now incarcerating maladjusted and misbehaving students. Between 15 and 20% of those students are placed in adult jails, where the statistical possibilities for a normal productive life are extremely slim. Children in New Jersey have been incarcerated for turning out the lights in a classroom. New York Times, Unruly Students, January 4, 2004. Is this a practical solution for the rest of the nation? Would we be better off fully funding education, paying teachers competitive salaries, equipping classrooms with sufficient current technologies and adequate supplies that would demonstrate a commitment to our schools? If schools are meant to be for the public good, how could privatizing them be any more useful than privatizing the police or military? Privatized systems concentrate on making money and certainly not on helping the weakest and most vulnerable children in the system. By definition, civilization seeks to lessen the suffering of the most vulnerable. By definition, the most needy would be left by the wayside by privatized educators. Can a long-term strategy for losing money be part of a business plan for a privatized education system? Adolescents and very troubled children are not easily adopted, and thus must be placed in long-term foster care or residential treatment facilities that cost $6,000 to $9,000 per month per child. through the doctrine of imminent harm and waiting a long time to take children out of toxic environments, are we creating more seriously disturbed children for the county to care for at very high costs with a much higher failure rate? Could it save our nation money if there were dental chairs and dentists within the schools who practice preventative dentistry, as in Denmark? Reported by the Minnesota Spokesman Recorder, December 2, 2004. In 2000, African-American boys accounted for 23% of the Minneapolis public school student body. However, they made up 37% of all students in special ed programs and 55% of all students in programs for emotional behavioral disorders. Data from the Minneapolis Research Valuation and Assessment of 2002 exposes the reading achievement gap that exists between African-American students and white students. 85% of white students pass the Minnesota Basic Standard Test reading assessment, while only 39% of African-American students passed. Have we undermined public education by berating its performance, underfunding its needs, and hiding its deficiencies until they are unbearable, all with the intent to dismantle a system meant for all citizens equally? Are jail cells a better investment than preschool education? Should the vast majority of people of color always be unemployed or earn 20% to 40% of the average white person's salary? Have the draconian zero-tolerance drug laws legitimized the incarceration of African-American men on a massive scale through selective enforcement of laws, permanently branding them as felon ex-offenders, and making them unable to find meaningful work at fair wages? Is there a social consciousness about the hopelessness of the drug laws and the increasing numbers of African-American juveniles diverted into a system of group homes and detention centers that reinforces antisocial behaviors which then lead to crime and imprisonment? To not educate, not rehabilitate, or not instill hope in offenders creates a bondage to humiliation and defeat that ensures prison growth. It also ensures our community's continued exorbitant investment in crime and punishment and the minimizing of programs that actually work to reduce prison growth. Have we made prisons a high-growth industry, offering big profits to entrepreneurs while undermining community efforts to reform this broken system? Can convicts or citizens lobby successfully against the well-funded prison industrial complex? Or are we doomed to a recidivism rate of 66% forever? Keep in mind, many ex-cons can't vote and they don't have a lobby. The labor pool behind bars and recently released from prison in this country is the biggest cheap labor pool in the nation. Call to action. Fight legislation that bullies, imprisons, or punishes people for nonviolent crimes. 90% of the children in juvenile justice have come out of child protection. Over 90% of the adults in the criminal justice system are a product of the juvenile justice system. America has created a prison feeder system for abused and neglected children. Legislators need to know how wrong their bad politics are and how many of us want humane policies. Become aware of legislative issues that impact the juvenile justice and criminal justice systems. Work to soften legislation that incarcerates abused and neglected children. Visit sentencingproject.org.